Finance World Information. Today, a spokesman for General Motors says the firm is forced to lay off some 3,000 workers during the next 2 weeks at the Arlington, Texas plant due to a surplus of unsold cars at retail outlets. And just glancing up 2 p.m. Dow Jones interims here. That's 2 o'clock Eastern Time. 30 industrials, 877.03. That's up 4.61. Transportations were unchanged. Utilities were off and stocks were up. All stocks indexed at 52.32 on the New York Stock Exchange. That's up 0.15 and equivalent to a gain of 9 cents in the average price of a common share. A moderate amount of volume, 12,870,000 shares. That's market information brought to you by Len Ventling. He's your State Farm Insurance representative located at 5th and Broadwater Avenue. The time is 12:15. This is KURL AMFM in Billings. And our temperature unofficially is 27 degrees. A pleasant 68 on the mall in West Park Plaza. Next, music on the FM side and news analysis on Curl AM. In the studio today, ladies and gentlemen, our special guest, Mr. Edward Botha, the consul for the Republic of South Africa in San Francisco. He's come down to be with us and to be interviewed on this program because we are giving more and more of our attention, as you and I must do, we are indeed forced to the continent of Africa. Mr. Botha will be back with me in just a moment. After the introduction to the program, be sure to call your friends and stay tuned yourself. I'll be back in a moment.
The Center for American Studies presents Dr. Stuart McBurney on the Voice of Americanism. This nationwide program stands for free enterprise and freedom under God. Now, Dr. McBurney and his analysis of the news.
Our special guest today, Mr. Edward Botha, the consul of the Republic of South Africa in San Francisco. And we're asking him some questions that perhaps can be answered more authoritatively by someone who really knows what he's talking about than we could get by just reading the newspaper. All right, I'll poke the questions very straightforwardly, and Mr. Botha will answer them, and you will judge, as listeners to this program today, the validity of the questions and the answers. Mr. Botha, you are being criticized throughout the world, and if you weren't so rich as a country, I dare say you would have terrible repressions like poor Rhodesia is suffering. And it all comes down to the fact that so many governments are in control of the liberals, the socialists, the communists sometimes, all of whom hate you. I'm talking about hate you as a nation and as a concept, not you as a person. But they do so primarily because of an ideological stance. Since most of the world is not white, they've got a lot of natural allies that instantly and emotionally rise to join with them. Now, would you explain apartheid, which is a Dutch word, is it?
Afrikaans, right?
Afrikaans, which is a kind of a local South African adaptation of Dutch and English.
Well, it evolved from the Dutch language.
Mm-hmm. And apartheid is a word that every literate person should know. It means apartness. It means the different races living apart. In other words, you are enforcing segregation in a way. Now, what does it mean?
I'd like to start at another point, and that is that you mentioned so many people who are anti-South African or hate us, and to use that word in
quotes. I know, but
so, it is ironical that so many of these people who have this attitude towards South Africa and proclaim to be great champions of the black people or the black cause or the champions of Africa are to me more racist than you could ever dream. They look at Europe and say that Europe is a continent of white people and are all called Europeans. But in looking at Europe, they acknowledge the fact that these white people have the right to their own nations and to their own cultures and to their own identities, and it should be maintained. And that the borders between France and Germany and all the other European countries should not be violated. But they look at Africa, and just because Africa has so many black people who are strange to these white people who want to just cover them all under one blanket, They look at Africa and say that because they are black, they are all just one nation. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that the majority of the opponents of South Africa are people who acknowledge the fact and who grant white people the right to identities and to cultures and to their traditions and to their individual nationhood, but they don't grant it to the black people of Africa. They do not acknowledge the fact that what South Africa is faced with is a white nation and nine black nations. Nations in their own right, with their own cultures, their own traditions, their own land, and that they have a God-given right to protect their identities, to develop their cultures, and to expand to their fullest potential and be an independent nation in the world with their own representatives at the United Nations, should they so decide, or whatever international organization they would want to belong to.
Now, do I understand you that South Africa would be willing to fragment its territory and allow 10 nations to be made out of it?
We are not going to fragment our territory. South Africa incorporates nine black countries at this stage. We inherited it from the early days when we became a union of South Africa. When we became a republic in 1961, we just had to take these countries in with us. In 1910, when we became a union, we incorporated nine black nations. Part of these nations, three of these nations at any rate, have their blood brothers living in other countries, now living in Botswana, Lesotho, and in Swaziland. But part of those countries actually have their people living in South Africa. So that for the same reason that these three territories, Swaziland, Lesotho, and Botswana today are independent countries, for that same reason, the nine black nations now living in South Africa should also be separate from South Africa. South Africa has never really regarded these black nations as part and parcel of South Africa.
Let me press that question again. You mean, as far as you know, the government of South Africa would be willing for any of these tribes to take part of the land of the Republic of South Africa and secede from the Union?
Let me put it to you this way. It is a standard policy of the government that we develop these countries to the point where they would come and say, we now want our independence. That is the policy. Then there we would negotiate and they would get their independence if they want to take it. I'd like to quote.
I gather, though, from the undertone, they don't want it.
I can give you a quote. At the Commonwealth meeting in San Francisco, Kaiser Matanzima, the paramount chief and leader of the Khoza people, spoke. He's the leader of the Transkei, and he made a public statement to say that he and Prime Minister Foster of the Republic of South Africa were in discussion just before he came to the States on his tour, and he was offered independence. And he said that he is not at this stage prepared to do it because he has certain negotiations he would want to carry out with the Republican government. The discussions are underway. It is a matter of time and a matter of the black nations deciding when they want independence. We are not going to impose it on them when they are not ready to accept it. The moment they are willing to take it, they are prepared to take it, we are willing to give it.
Now, let's look at the rest of South Africa. We have a great concern for five nations of what we call West Africa. They have a terrible drought condition which has lasted for 3 or 4 years. Now, who runs those countries? Are they self-governing? Are they colonial governments? Are they army-run? Or who runs them?
Well, the areas that, if I recollect now, who are drought-stricken are autonomous countries governing themselves.
Were they formerly French colonies, most of them?
I think that most of them were French colonies, yes.
Is this the fault of the nation, the fault of the government, or the fault of the folkways, or the fault of nature that they're in trouble?
I would have to depend to answer that question on what I have read in local newspapers about the situation. There was a drought situation, definitely. There are some schools of thought to say that it is the inability to really cultivate according to modern methods, whatever. I really could not say what is the actual cause.
You have not been in those countries.
I have not been
nor have I been in Vermont this year.
But that there is definitely a crisis on hand that I make out to be.
Now, back to the political, which is more of our concern, and the ideological. You have a total of 10 nations in South Africa. And apartheid not only separates the whites from the coloreds and the coloreds from the blacks, Well, apparently the blacks from each other.
Yes, there is a separation, black from black, in that the Khoisa have their own country that they live in. They, when it comes to election time, only the Khoisa vote for the Khoisa parliament.
Oh.
When the Zulu parliament is elected, only Zulus vote for the Zulu parliament. And when white election comes along, to put it very flatly, then only the white people vote for their representatives in the white parliament. We have, at this stage, 10 autonomous parliaments really operating in South Africa.
Now, in terms of your relationship to the rest of South Africa, how would you describe that? I'm talking about the rest of the whole continent of Africa.
Oh, the whole continent? Well, we have, with our neighboring African states, Lesotho, Swaziland, Botswana, and Malawi too, and with the Portuguese countries around us, and the 9 black countries, we have very close cooperation. We buy and sell across the border. We have common customs control. None of the black nations around us need a defense department because we have given ample assurance and signed pact that we have no aggressive motives, so that they don't have to build up a defense department at all. I can save them that expense and invest it in welfare and education, for that matter. For the rest of Africa, we have, with some of the African countries, we have good relations. There are some of the countries who are very much opposed to South Africa. There is, what I can say at this stage, negotiation between South Africa, dialogue, some people call it, between South Africa and a number of African countries.
Are you in a position to be of help to those countries?
Yes, indeed we are. Most of the diseases common to Africa have been totally eliminated in South Africa. We have the medical know-how, we have the agricultural know-how and the industrial know-how to be of great assistance to the whole of the African continent. It is ironical, too, that some of the African countries who oppose us at the Organization for Africa Unity and also at the United Nations regularly receive aid from us. When they are in trouble, we send our farmers in to go and assist them. When they are hungry, we send food. When there is a drought, we send relief. When they are in need of medication, we send in vaccinations to them.
And they still officially don't like you.
And
welcome to the club. We Americans have been experiencing that with exactly the same syndrome.
We even to improve their livestock, give as grants to them, stud animals to improve the livestock.
What about your relations with the United States at this time?
At this stage, our relation is as in the past. There is no change.
Well, people to people is very fine, but I'm talking about government policy to government policy. Are we taking any discriminatory steps against you?
There are still some embargoes imposed by the United Nations, which America still adheres to. Yes.
What are they?
Basically, it's the sale of armaments and the sale of aircraft and the ships.
Civil aircraft?
We don't buy any civil aircraft or Boeing.
No 747s?
Yes, no, we get Boeings. For transportation, yes.
But, our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, has been Mr. Edward Botha. I'm going to ask him to come back for the next broadcast because while we may appear to be chatting about two countries and about some of the problems of his country and his continent, we are dealing with some very important information because you should be fully up on the situation as it is in Africa, a continent that one day may be the balance of power in the world. In any case, it is a continent in ferment. And we'll be back on the next broadcast with more of this interview. In the meantime, I earnestly ask you to help us keep the truth on the air and in print. And before the American people, you are the only sponsor we have. Your contributions for the nonprofit work of this program, buy radio time, supply information, postage, publications that are of great value. One of them is this, 1974, the year of the terrorist. And that's what it's turning out to be. I said it was coming. If you were listening to the program months ago, you heard me say, now, watch this. This is going to develop in a much worse situation than it has been. Now, I make another prediction. It's going to get even worse, and it's going to get much closer to you. And in this new publication, we tell you why. It's our gift a useful tool to share back part of what you make possible. So write me today, Dr. McBurney, Voice of Americanism, Glendale, California, 91209. Goodbye, and God bless you.
The Center for American Studies has presented Dr. McBurney with his analysis of the news. Published materials offered on today's broadcast may be obtained by writing Voice of Americanism, Glendale, California, 91209. This nonprofit program is supported only by the contributions of those who write. The address again is Voice of Americanism, Glendale, California, 91209.
The address is the Voice of Americanism, Glendale, California, 91209, the zip code. Include the information that you hear a broadcast on this station 6 days a week.